Hello, this is Brian Reynolds, volunteer with the San Luis Obispo County Library for Issues and Ideas on KCBX, public radio for the Central Coast. Today, we are joined by Sherry Rowe, founding member and chairperson of the Santa Margarita Historical Society, and Jackie Kinsey, North County Regional Librarian for the San Luis Obispo County Library. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our main topic today is something that's very close to my heart, and that is local history, and specifically history of Santa Margarita. And Sherry, you have written a book.
I sure have. It's one of those photo books with the captions, but also some good history. We actually start with the first people, the Indians, and go all the way up to about the 1960s.
The format of the book, it's a lot of text, or is it mostly photographs with captions?
All of Arcadia Publishing books, the Images of America books, are pretty standard. They're 127 pages, you have 200 photos, and they have 8,000 words.
Locating and getting access to older photographs often can be quite a chore. How did you do that? How did you accomplish that?
Oh, we were very lucky. In about 1998, we had a grant from outgoing supervisor David Blakely to the Friends of the Santa Margarita Library with the purpose of preserving local history. David Blakely was a high school history teacher, and he saw that it was important to hold on to our history. So the Friends of the Library went out and started collecting photos and interviews, and we had two wonderful events called Margarita Memories, where people came in and shared their photographs and their artifacts, and the Historical Society came out of that.
And so when you got your hands on the photographs, did you copy them or scan them? For publication?
Well, originally, when the first photos came through, it was pre-scanning days. So we took them to Jim's campus camera, and they took photographs of the photographs, made negatives, and we printed from there.
Jackie, what, in your view, is the library's role in not only promoting this type of book, but promoting access to local history?
Well, in the past couple of years, the SLO Library System has celebrated local history during the month of November, so we're very excited that Cherry's book came out very timely for this, too. Not only to provide some of the local history and access to it.
Now, I believe, speaking of the library there, and Santa Margarita Library in particular, there's some events coming up.
There is. We're excited that Sherry is joining us to celebrate her book and also the 20th anniversary celebration of the Santa Margarita Library. It's been 25 years since it was established, and that will be taking place on October 26th from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the library itself. There'll be all kinds of fun stuff and recognitions going on that night.
And free admission. Everyone's welcome.
Oh, absolutely. Free admission. Everybody come out and enjoy.
There's a lot of things that are unique about Santa Margarita, but its ability to grow or not grow. Tell us about that.
Santa Margarita was laid out in 1889. It was laid out for the railroad. At the time, the railroad was stalled in Templeton, and it could either go further west from Templeton down what is now Highway 1 towards Avila and completely bypass the town of San Luis Obispo, or it could go south and have to somehow manage getting down the Cuesta Grade. Well, Patrick Murphy, who was the Anglo owner of the Santa Margarita Ranch at the time, was a cattle rancher, and he saw a definite advantage to having the railroad come to him to be able to pick up his cattle. Also, the city fathers of San Luis Obispo certainly didn't want the railroad to bypass San Luis Obispo. So they had a huge campaign buying up the land. Patrick Murphy gave easements across his property, and to sweeten the deal, they took 640 acres, which is one section, and laid it out into a town. And Santa Margarita is truly a railroad town. You can tell that because the streets are lettered instead of numbered. So if you see towns that have lettered streets and they have a railroad, you could tell that it was laid out by the railroad. And the reason for that was the tracks are numbered. So they didn't want numbered streets and numbered tracks in case there was an incident on the tracks.
Now, when you say it's a railroad town, in plain English, what does that mean? Does that mean railroad staff and their families lived there, or people lived there who, you know, bought and sold things for the railroad? How does that work?
It was laid out by the railroad. Mm-hmm. The land development arm of the Southern Pacific Railroad It was called the Pacific Improvement Company, and it was a land development company. And it was owned by the big four, the four principal owners of the Southern Pacific Railroad, owned the Land Development Corporation. So the land was owned by them, and when you bought a lot, you bought it from the Pacific Improvement Company.
So it's a company town, per se.
Company town. The people they were selling to were not so much railroad workers, although at one time Santa Margarita had the largest population in the entire county because the railroad was stalled in Santa Margarita for 4 years. So all freights had to be loaded and unloaded in Santa Margarita and taken by horses and wagons down the old stagecoach road.
Very steep road.
Very dangerous.
The town hasn't grown in size, but how has it changed, do you think, based on your living there or what is discussed in the book and other sources? I mean, how has it changed, say, demographically or economically or not?
Well, I've lived in Santa Margarita since 1977. Well, some of the ways it hasn't changed is that we like to say we've resisted gentrification. The town really loves its old houses, really takes care of them. Our population has never fluctuated much. It's always between 1,000 and 1,200 people. I would say that at one time Santa Margarita was an inexpensive place to live because you couldn't afford to live in San Luis. Now it's become a highly desirable place to live because it's a small town and everyone knows each other. It's got beautiful trees, pretty gardens, old houses, small houses. You have to go to the post office to get your mail because there's no mail delivery in town. The civic groups are amazingly strong in town, and it's safe.
What did the people do? I mean, what was their livelihood? Were they farmers, or did they travel to the big city, i.e. San Luis Obispo or Atascadero, to work?
Well, that's always been a problem, that Santa Margarita has always been a bedroom community. There's never been any industry. Originally, we had our little markets. But probably the best employer besides the railroad in town was the Union Oil Pumping Station. And I have several pages in my book about the amazing history of that. And that's part of the pumping station that goes into San Luis and out to the Union 76 Pier out at Avila. So that's an interesting story, but that provided good jobs for people. A lot of vaqueros, a lot of woodcutters, poor people.
Mm-hmm.
Now mostly
salt of the earth.
Salt of the earth. Now more and more people like to live there because it's close to San Luis.
Now let's go back in time a little bit to say the Spanish period when the first Europeans came, and of course we know that there were missionaries accompanied by soldiers that came up from Mexico and Baja California. There were missions throughout Baja and then coming to Alta, Upper California, establishing those missions. And San Miguel didn't get a mission. And why was that?
Santa Margarita.
Santa Margarita.
Yes. Well, Santa Margarita didn't actually have a resident priest. So we'll back up. Originally, the first mission in the area was Mission San Luis Obispo in 1772. But it became obvious that Santa Margarita was an excellent ranching, cattle, grapes, wheat area to be able to grow. There was a lot of unrest around that time with profiteers or pirates coming in and wreaking havoc to the mission in San Luis. So the idea was to go over the hill, establish an assistencia or an assistance mission or a helper mission. Santa Margarita de Cortona, which is our saint, did all the same things that a regular mission would do, but we didn't have a resident priest. So when the secularization of the area happened after the Mexican Revolution, Mexican independence, there was no one to speak for Santa Margarita. And so it became part of a Mexican land grant.
Right. What had been part of the Catholic Church was now absorbed into private land.
Right.
Probably the mission in San Luis Obispo depended on the asistencia for produce, for meat, hides.
It did a lot of things. Yes, it was a farming mission, a farming area, but it also was a meeting area because it was so isolated and in such a place so advantageously in the state. It was halfway between the Southern Mission and the Northern Missions. So when it came time for mission conference, it could be done secretly or privately at Santa Margarita. And it was also a good way spot. We have, there's Padre quarters where a lot of mission hierarchy were housed.
This is Brian Reynolds, volunteer with the San Luis Obispo County Library for Issues and Ideas on KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. Today we are joined by Sherry Rowe, founding member and chairperson of the Santa Margarita Historical Society, and Jackie Kinsey, North Coast Regional Librarian. A little bit more, let's talk about a little bit more of the, say in this case, Mexican history transitioning into American history. Joaquin Estrada and the Estrada family, big news, big personalities in the day, lots of myths and misconceptions. Let's talk about him.
After the sacralization of the land, when Mexico became independent from Spain, it was important to be able to hold on to that land. And the best way to hold on to the land that they had just won is to farm it, to grow it, to have families, and to populate it. So people of means were given large swaths of land in Mexican land grants. And the 17,745 acres that became the Santa Margarita Ranch came out of that land grant. He was only 27, but that was not young in those days. And he was of means. His family was part of the governor's family in Monterrey, California, which was the capital of northern Mexico at that time. He started a huge cattle ranch and started a lot of our traditions that we still have now. Our Days of the Dawn celebration, which was a celebration of Mexican independence. The town has carried that on off and on through the years.
Annual celebration.
Off and on through the years. It's taking a hiatus right now, mm-hmm. but it'll come back. And he had his own challenges. One is the weather, the economy, and then probably the worst thing that could have happened was that Mexico lost this area and when it became a state and became California. What was required at that time was that all landowners had to prove warranty or title to their land, and it had to be done in American court in English, and it was very costly and very time-consuming. And by then, he was ready to sell, and so he sold his land to the Martin Murphy family and became our first 5th District Supervisor in the county. And he continued on a pretty illustrious career. He had the Estrada Gardens down at the bottom of the grade, and that's where him and his wife are buried.
Seems to me that there's, and I couldn't name names right now, but a lot of Mexican, upper Mexican society retained roles in the early statehood of California. They were judges. I think there was the governor, Pio Pico, maybe was one of the first governors, so they, most of them at least, made a smooth transition.
An interesting side note that I found while doing research for Santa Margarita was the family that bought the ranch after Joaquin Estrada, and their name was Martin and Mary Murphy family, and put their son Patrick Murphy in charge of the ranch. And they were born in Ireland, so they were Irish, immigrated to Canada, were Canadian, immigrated to Missouri, were Americans, and then immigrated to Santa Margarita and San Jose, Santa Clara, when it was still under Mexican ownership, became Mexican, and then when they became America again, became Americans.
I also heard that, and there's a lot of myths about Mr. Estrada, but it was party central there. Fandangos and barbecues and...
He had barbecues that would last a month.
Wow.
It was a long time. It was a long way to get there, and once you were there, you were there. He had circuses and barbecues that lasted a month, and people would come from all of Mexico and all over, and rodeos and brandings. He knew how to have a good time.
You know, that's the true Old West. You know, what we think of as the Old West would have been probably another 20, 30 years in the making after that.
Yeah, they would put entire steers on spits and barbecue the entire
wow.
The entire steer.
Son of a gun.
And circus, our first circus that came to town with Joaquin Estrada.
Now, we talked earlier about the ranch, Santa Margarita Ranch, which has its controversies here and there, but it was intended to be developed, no? By the Murphy family when they bought it, or?
The Murphy family were land developers.
Mm-hmm.
And Patrick Murphy, their son who ran the ranch, was always looking somehow to make the ranch pay. So he entered into an agreement with Mr. Spreckles to grow sugar beets, but the land didn't want to support it. It was too rocky. They were trying to entice North County College to come over the hill, and he was willing to give land for that. They were trying to do something with a military base. It was always something. Often the Rinconada was sold over and over and would come back. But some of the ranch was sold off. Some of it was homesteaded. And it wasn't until 1904 when Patrick Murphy sold the ranch to Frank Reese that the boundaries were set.
Let's talk about some of the photographs in this wonderfully put together and beautiful book. One thing that stood out for me earlier was a friendship quilt. Could you tell us what is a friendship quilt?
Right. This came from the Marvel Haberkam's quilt. Is that a great name? Marvel Haberkam. And this is in the 30s during the height of the Depression. And she had gone over to the valley with her family to live and had come back. And so they threw a big party. And for women, what you did was you would embroidery a quilt square with your name on it. And then the women would come together, sew it, and make it a quilt. Well, Marvo, she was pretty famous for being thrifty during the Depression. So unfortunately, much of the quilt was put together with bleached flour bags. So the quilt did not do well through the years. But we've photographed each square with a biography of each woman. And you can see that on our website, santamargaritahistoricalsociety.org, if you want to look more at that quilt.
Yeah, it's a shame that it wasn't built to last because it's obviously imbued with a lot of history.
And it was very, very well used. It was a quilt that was used. But we've been able to research each woman's name on that quilt and have a biography of them.
Archives might give one the first impression of a dusty drawers in a dark room with spiders and no sunlight coming in. And yet there's a lot of archives that are vibrant that people need to know more about and that cover not just our history but where we're going in the future. Libraries are a type of archive. If I said to you, either one of you, history's not that important, why do you bother? What would you say?
Say, well, how do you find out where I came from or what is the purpose of this place or that place? There would be just too many questions if we didn't have that around.
Unanswered questions.
Unanswered questions, yeah. And that could drive a librarian crazy, right?
Sherry, how about you?
Well, I would think that you couldn't possibly know where you are unless you know where you came from. And you couldn't possibly chart a future without knowing your past.
The book's available. Where is it for sale? How can people get it?
Well, it's most everywhere in Santa Margarita you can find it. It's also at the History Center in San Luis, at the Photo Shop in San Luis. But if you come into Margarita, it's most everywhere.
Images of Santa Margarita. That's the exact title of the book by Cherry Rowe and the Santa Margarita Historical Society, and there's an event coming up.
Yeah, Cherry's going to be at two events, I believe, doing author talks and probably book signings. November 5th at 4:30 at the Santa Margarita Library.
On November 3rd, I will be in Creston.
Oh, at Creston, yeah.
And I'll be giving about a 30-minute, hour talk, depending on how many questions I get about Creston history.
Right.
Awesome.
So if you want to find out more of these fascinating stories about that local area, please join us.
Excellent. This is Brian Reynolds, volunteer with the San Luis Obispo County Library for Issues and Ideas on KCBX, Public Radio for the Central Coast. Today, we were joined by Cherry Rowe, founding member and chairperson of the Santa Margarita Historical Society, and by Jackie Kinsey, North County Regional Librarian for the San Luis Obispo County Library. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you.